it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, we're not alone.
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Martin Willis, your host. And we have Ray Hernandez coming up as our guest tonight. Alejandro is waiting in the wings for the news. He'll be coming up in just a minute. But before that, I have a little bit of housekeeping. I want to thank everyone for their support. If you're thinking about supporting the show and you haven't done it yet, well, hold on. Don't go ahead and do that, and I'll tell you why. Because I received a call from the CEO of Get Joy Ride. That's the platform on how we support the second part of the subscription base, and they told me they had some good news, which ended up being that they're closing September 30th. I still haven't figured out why that's good news. Anyway, I need your help. If you're a listener and you're a geek or partial geek or whatever, I need to figure out another platform that's going to help me do what I intend to do. I did contact Libsyn, and they take basically $1 per subscriber per month, so I have so many $1 per subscribers that's not going to work. So I need to find another platform. If anyone has any ideas out there, please email me at martin@podcastufo.com. Now, there is a spam stopper, so you're going to have to confirm your email because I still get a lot of spam even though I have that. But, you know, that's enough babbling for me. I thank each and every listener, whether you can help us out or not. And we are ready to move on with Alejandro. How are you?
I'm doing well, my friend.
Good, good. So you're going to be on the beach coming up here again.
Yeah, I love the beach. I'm addicted to the beach.
And you live in the desert.
I love it. Yeah, and I'm in the desert. But luckily, I'm not far from the beach. So San Diego is a short ride from Phoenix, about 4 or so hours. So I love to skedaddle it on out to the beach as much as possible. So we're actually going to Del Mar.
Oh, yeah.
Got a condo out there for a few days, and it's just sweet. Delightful.
Now, isn't there some type of road issue? Didn't I hear something about there's some type of road closure in between? Am I thinking of Las Vegas? That's what I'm thinking of, I guess.
Well, there was a road closure not too long ago. I forgot what happened. I think part of the road washed out or giant scorpion ate it or something like that. I can't remember. But the path that I'm taking skirts along the border with Mexico, and it is all free and clear. It's kind of funny. Actually, a few years ago, the sheriff out in Pinal County, and everybody knows Joe Arpaio, the sheriff out here, they were saying that it was this area was overran by Mexican cartels and stuff, and it completely untrue. They were totally lying for political reasons. So it's actually a very safe and clear and quick route.
Wow.
So no worries.
Look for Donald Trump while you're driving through there. You never know.
Never seen a giant scorpion. If I see Trump, that would be horrifying.
All right. So what's going on from the news this week?
The news. So I want to talk UFO triangles, so triangular UFOs, because we've got a lot of stories on those lately. In fact, our UFO report that's going to be coming out on our YouTube page on Friday, we're going to show you some of these pictures and videos because I think they're pretty cool. But, yeah, I'm going to go over some of the stories that we've had. I think we covered one of those last week, but we've gotten some more since. So, and there's a progression to these stories. So the first story is kind of a, eh. The second story is like a, hmm. The third story, though, is more of a, whoa.
Hmm.
Okay, exciting,
yeah.
Huh?
Hmm.
You ready for it?
Yeah.
So let's do the So, okay, this took place on August 22nd. It was about 9:50 p.m., and there's this family that had some friends over in Pennsylvania, and they were having dinner. After they finished dinner, they went and hugged their friends goodbye. But as they went outside, they were leaving, you know, one of them said, "Hey, what's that?" So they looked over, and they saw these three lights in a triangular formation over the trees. They kept staring at it, and they felt like it got larger and was coming towards them. They said that the triangular lights were orange, reddish, and they kept getting, appeared to get closer and closer. So they were getting real excited. They were scrambling to try to take a video or a picture. But as, you know, we've talked about before, it's difficult to get points of light at the night, and their phones weren't really picking it up. So they watched it. Then one of the lights on the bottom slowly faded out. A few seconds later, another one faded out. And then a few seconds later, the third one faded out. And they said they stood there stunned in silence, kind of staring at each other. Then they all said their goodbyes and went their merry ways. Why is this a yeah. Well, first being reddish or orangish, red flag there. That's what Chinese lanterns are like. And then the fading out, because that's exactly what happens is, you know, they all fade out in the order that they were floated in the air. They just kind of fade out one at a time. So it's a perfect description of what Chinese lanterns would do. So that's why I'm a little bit skeptical of this one. And, you know, it's hard because lights at night, you know, I've seen these things. Maybe you, some of the listeners have as well. I've got video. They look really weird. You know, they look strange when you have these points of lights in the sky that aren't too far. And they can look like part of a solid object when they're moving together. But I think this is a case of Chinese lanterns.
Could be, but sort of triangular. But just also keep in mind that that's what the Phoenix lights did. They flickered out and back on again. But these didn't flicker back on, obviously.
Well, and I'm, you know, of a firm belief that at least the later lights, not all of them, but the later lights of the Phoenix lights were not
flares.
Chinese lanterns, but flares, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've got videos of those from the same place I think they were, at Goldwater, from my house here in Phoenix over the air. You see them often. But anyway, here's the one that's a little more interesting. You ready for this one?
Oh, yeah.
So this is January 7th, 2015, but it was just submitted recently. This was a guy driving home towards Phoenixville in Pennsylvania, and he saw a strange light. She saw, actually, a strange light. She thought maybe it was plane. She saw three of them. It looked like a triangular. Well, she couldn't tell what it was, actually. She said they were just really bright. As she got closer to the light, she decided, wow, those are way too bright to be a helicopter or a plane. And she says that there was no noise. She wanted to pull over, but she was on the highway and there was traffic, so she didn't think it would be safe at the time. Once she passed, but during this time, she's taking pictures with her phone. She took a bunch of them. And you do see these triangular, you know, these three or four lights together in a pattern. And once she got past the light, she said she was able to look back and see that it was a triangular-shaped craft with these bright lights on each corner. So, and she took a bunch of pictures. This one's kind of a because it could be an aircraft. I think in one of the pictures, though, it looks like four lights. So it could be two headlights, two lights on each side of the wings. But all of the lights are white, and they are kind of interesting pictures. So I'd love for people to kind of take a look at that and let us know what you think. So that one's a little more interesting. Not so easy to figure out what the heck that was.
Yeah, so all these stories will be in our show notes, links to them that I'll bounce over to openminds.tv directly to the stories.
They better.
They will. That is if you send me the links.
And yeah, we'll Will do.
All right. So what's the Fantastico?
This is the cool one. Because, you know, as we talk about on this show, so often, you know, like that last one, it could be something, but it's probably this kind of things. This is one where I don't know what the heck this is. You know, this one's weird. This was another one that was videotaped. This is in Mississippi. This one took place in February of 2015. This was a lady who says she's a 15-year ufologist in Memphis, in the Memphis area. So she said that she had been seeing for like a week these bright lights in this one area. So finally, one day at, it was nearly 1 a.m., she was able to see them. So she runs outside to go videotape them, and she did videotape them, and it's a very interesting video of this cluster of lights. It's really weird. She only got 20 seconds because it had just snowed, and she didn't even put on her shoes because she wanted to capture it. So she was walking in the snow, and she just couldn't take it anymore. She had to run back inside. But she watched these bright lights. She says we're in a triangular formation over the cornfields for about 20 minutes before they just vanished. She said that it appeared that there were smaller orbs being ejected from this larger object, and that it was maybe only 100 feet off the ground. So this is a really weird one. It was investigated by Mark Bort, a MUFON field investigator, and he closed it as an unknown, just saying that he couldn't figure out what it was either. It's interesting that she claims that the lights were in a triangular formation because they don't look like that at all in the video. However, in the video, you have a cluster of lights is what you see, and they're all different shaped. They seem to almost be in different directions. It's just very strange, these lights. I can't figure out what this might be. I'd love for people to go take a look and maybe make some comments if they can figure out what this is. But, yeah, this is the story, Hovering Triangle UFO videotaped by Mississippi Witness. All of these, by the way, were contributed. These are articles written by Roger Marsh, who's the MUFON Director of Communications, and he keeps an eye on this. And what he's been doing is going and looking at picture and video cases that have been investigated and determined to be unknown by the investigator, and then posting some stories on this. So this is a treasure trove, I think, of some of the best UFO stuff. And this is one of this is a really good video. This one's got me scratching my head.
It is, and we talked about it a little bit on your show. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, check out that video. It is really strange the way, I think I said they're like omnidirectional. In other words, the clusters of light seem to be facing out, pointing out in different directions, and it's really bizarre footage. So check that out. Again, you can go through the show notes, and it's right on openminds.tv. Alejandro, will you have yourself a great time at the beach?
Yeah, what, are you going to do anything special?
No, you know, I'm in what they call vacation land. It's right on our license plate in Maine. And people sit for hours and hours on the turnpike, so I am not going anywhere, I don't think. Yeah. I live right by a lake. I live where everybody wants to go, so I might as well stay. Yeah,
might as well. That's great. I want to move by the beach one day.
Yeah, I can tell. All right, well, we'll be talking to you next week, Alejandro. Have a good one.
All right, you too. Talk to you later, buddy.
Talk to you later. So hang in there, everyone, for the quick little music break, and we'll be right back with Ray Hernandez. That clip was provided by one of the fans of the show, Bruce Rainier. I believe he's up in Canada. Thank you, Bruce. And on the line, we have Ray Hernandez. How are you, Ray?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing
excellent.
Great. Doing well. And we're going to talk about all different types of things. We got, an hour and 45 minutes or so. We're going to take a break at the top of the hour. But before we get into the nuts and the bolts of what Free is doing and all that, I wanted to find out, who is Ray Hernandez? And I understand you're an IRS tax attorney, or you currently are, or you were?
Correct.
Estate tax?
Estate tax. I've been an IRS estate tax attorney, which is an inheritance tax for the multimillionaires. And we won't go after you, Martin, unless you die with more than $5 million of net assets.
Well, you know, I wonder if our paths have crossed. I praised Merv Griffin's entire estate, all his properties, and after he passed away, and certainly was, you know, well above that. But it's kind of funny. I'm an estate appraiser. That's what I do. So it's kind of funny how you never know.
Look at that. You never know. And,
yeah.
But I mainly deal with accountants, CPAs, and attorneys. But previous to that, my experience there, I was an academic at the City University of New York. And I also taught at other universities. And I was a director of two major programs. One was as a director for the City University of New York for an environmental studies project. And the other one was with the City of New York. I was a director of the Office of Environmental Quality, where I supervised a very large staff doing innovative environmental work. And previous to that, I went to University of California, Berkeley, where I was a PhD student in city and regional planning. And I had finished all of my coursework. And when I was writing my dissertation, my ex-wife got a brain aneurysm. Mm. Which I was never able to complete my dissertation because I had to undertake two full-time jobs because I had two little babies to take care of and a wife that was not very well. And previous to that, I went to Cornell University for a master's degree. And again, pretty much all straight A's in all these studies. So if it wasn't for my ex-wife having a brain aneurysm, I would be an academic faculty at a major university somewhere in the United States.
Now, and presently, what you're doing for a job, it would seem like it would take a lot of time. In other words, seems like a job like that is at least a 40-hour a week plus commute type of position or more. So how do you find time to do this other work that you're doing?
It's extremely difficult. I basically have no life after my IRS work. I don't have personal time, to tell you the truth. I do have a 13-year-old daughter and a wife, and so they're always demanding my time. And it is very difficult trying to meet the needs of a job, of a family, and to do this work with Free. Because, as you know, we have 11 elite members as part of our group. The most well-known is Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who's one of the co-founders of Free, and Dr. Rudy Shields. So it's it takes a lot out of their time as well with the work of Free. But slowly we're making progress.
Right. I just want to tell the live listener out there, we are, if you're listening live on the Dark Matter Digital Network or the I forget the radio station, wherever this goes out on. You can jump over to podcastufo.com. We have a chat room that you're welcome to engage in. We have a question up there now. I'll get to that in just a minute. And you can also call on the show. We have a live line here at 603-967-4030. And if you do call in, you're going to be taken in live. So watch your language if that happens. So, and let's go back now. If I remember right, and pardon me if I get this wrong, but are you an experiencer yourself?
Oh, yes, and my entire family is. My wife, my daughter, and myself. I've had numerous experiences. Let me just highlight up just a couple of them. There was a metallic little craft my wife saw inside our living room. And let me give you a little background for that. We had a 16-year-old dog, a Jack Russell Terrier, that was very, very ill before she had her stroke. So she was walking around like an old lady on crutches, you know, limping around. She had been taking tons of medications, and we just, you know, did not want to put her to sleep. And so what happened on a Saturday night at about 7 or 8 o'clock in the evening, our dog got a stroke and basically became totally paralyzed from the neck down. And we described the symptoms to our vet, who was a good friend of ours. And he said, look, what you're telling me appears like Nena, which means little girl in Spanish, that Nena had a stroke. And that he says, look, I'll open up my office tomorrow, Sunday, and we could put her to sleep, you know. And my wife wanted a little ceremony for her. He says, fine, you know, whatever you want. So my wife at that point was very, very Catholic. She grew up in Mexico. You had to be at church like 2 to 3 times a week, definitely Sunday Mass. So she started praying all night for a miraculous cure, basically, for our dog. So that Sunday morning at 6 o'clock, the dog was barking because that's what she could do. She couldn't move anything else, but she couldn't move her head. She could move her head. So my wife picked her up. We saw her. We moved her around, and she was still paralyzed. So my wife then carried her down the stairs to bring her to the bathroom outside to see if she could do, you know, her necessities, because we didn't know what was, you know, that condition. And then I went back to sleep. So then about 15 minutes later, my wife, not 15 minutes, maybe 10 to 15 minutes later, my wife was yelling at me. And it was like, Ray, Ray, Ray. And I totally ignored her because it's Sunday morning at 6 o'clock in the morning. So after all her yelling, I totally ignored her. She went up there and basically hauled me out of bed. And then she wouldn't tell me what it was, but she says, I need to go downstairs. I need to go downstairs. And let me describe what she saw, okay? But that was, as I said, I didn't see what she saw. I saw something totally different. What she described was like a little craft that looked like an upside-down U. It was roughly 2 feet wide by 3 feet in height, metallic shape, silverish, polished, and it had two green lights in the middle.
Did you say this was actually in the house itself?
In our living room.
Wow.
In our living room. And again, I did not see that. She saw that. And so my wife never had anything UFO related or ET or paranormal related in our lives. Neither one of us. She knelt down and started praying. And she basically said, if you're a bad spirit, get the hell out. If you're a good spirit, stay. And so, and then all of a sudden, these lights started flickering inside. And it shot out from the side these white fluorescent lights. And then that's when she started yelling at me to go downstairs. So she hauled me out of bed, and so she went in front of me, and I was right behind her. As soon as she got to the bottom of the stairs, and I was like one or two flights up, she totally disappeared in front of me. Okay. Now, again, what I'm telling you is not rational the way you act with these types of encounters, because you probably have heard from other experiencers that these entities totally control your consciousness and your behavior. So what happened immediately, like I didn't even pay attention to my wife having disappeared. I just looked in the corner of the room and I saw something totally different. What I saw was a floating plasma being, and I call it a being because it, for what I'm about to tell you. Let me describe it. It was basically 2.5 to 3 feet wide, about 1.5 feet in height, looked like pure energy, pure plasma, rectangular in shape, but it didn't have any external edges to it because it was pure energy, semi-translucent, multicolored, not like a rainbow. We have one color attached to another, but like all these colors mixing and matching and flowing all inside. And what I did is basically wave my hand at it, and I said, ah, BS, you know? Then I turned around, I walked up the stairs, I went to bed, put my hands on the chest, looked straight up at the ceiling, and within a minute I was knocked out, okay? I must have been knocked out. We didn't check the time, anywhere from 15 minutes to a half an hour, I'm not sure. Then I woke up, but then I was fully conscious, and I said to myself, holy cow, you know, what the hell just happened, you know? And I ran downstairs, and there in the living room, my wife is dancing around the floor, saying, the angels cured her, the angels cured her, the angels cured her. And I was like, what angels? You know, well, you saw them. You saw them. I said, well, I didn't see an angel. What I saw was this plasma thing, you know. And I went upstairs. They put me to sleep for a half an hour, 15 minutes, whatever it was. And says, and then she then described what she saw. Now, for the rest of the day, it was pure pandemonium and pure confusion. We were never scared at all. It was just because my wife always saw it as angel. To me, I saw that plasma thing, you know, and I didn't know that she was praying. She didn't tell me that until much later on. So what I realized many, many months later was this concept of missing time, because to her, I was right behind her going down the stairs when she looked down, and then she saw her dog was totally cured. The dog, when I got downstairs, was like running around like a little puppy, jumping up and down, you know, like a foot and a half, like a Jack Russell does.
Right.
And
wow.
She was like a teenager, you know, and it wasn't even the old dog before the stroke, you know, walking like gingerly with the arthritis and everything. No, you know. And so for a long time, it was just bewilderment. And immediately I went to the internet and I typed in, you know, UFOs, ETs, you know, aliens, paranormal, you know, because I had no concept of what this was.
Now, was this the first incident?
Yes, this was the very first incident. And it was March of 2012, March 4th of 2012. And then what happened, I won't go into the details, but there was three incidences where my wife saw a craft. Two times she called it down, and twice there were witnesses, mainly her family members, that had witnessed this craft with her. And then one time I called down a craft, but it was playfully, because the night before I had seen this guy on YouTube calling down a craft in the middle of the day, and this little speck appeared. And so it was already at 9 o'clock at night. It was a totally cloudy night. And I was waiting for this friend of mine to give me some papers. And I said, what the hell, you know, let me experiment and do what I saw on YouTube last night. But it was, you know, I really wasn't goofing off. I was sincere about it, but not like someone that goes on these retreats for 3 or 4 days and prays and meditates for 3 or 4 days. No, it's just like, okay, well, I'm waiting for my friend. Let me try it. What happened was there was a huge gigantic craft that appeared, the bottom of the size of a football stadium. The bottom of the craft was 5 feet from the roof. Okay, 5 feet from the roof. Less than 30 feet away from us.
Jeez.
It was huge. It went back 600 meters, it looked like, and 100 meters tall. And then I heard a voice saying, Daddy, you and Mommy have seen a UFO. Next time you guys see a UFO, you call me. All right, Daddy? And again, they control your mind. So immediately I went to the window and I called my just recently 12-year-old daughter to come outside and see this craft, okay, because I was outside. And we live in a cul-de-sac, a very wide and long cul-de-sac. Now, if you're a rationally thinking person, that would be the last thing you would do, you know, call down a 12-year-old daughter to come and see this thing, you know, because you don't know what the hell is going to happen. So then for 15 minutes, she and I saw this craft. Then my friend comes, not by himself, but with his wife and their 17-year-old daughter. Now, both of these folks, she's from Mexico, she's from Colombia, both of them are professionals, college educated, big time Catholics, that every Sunday they got to be at church, okay? And it was total bewilderment, you know, on their part. And then I've had numerous paranormal experiences. My wife had them as well. So it's basically my entire family has had these experiences. Myself and my wife seeing this entity that controlled our minds. It basically took my wife and returned our dog completely cured from a total paralysis, a miraculous healing. And then my daughter and I saw that huge craft with three other adults. And then my wife in Mexico and once in the U.S. saw sightings of these huge crafts.
Wow. This is really interesting. Now, so Monday, you go back to work, you're hanging around the water cooler. You didn't really bring this up, did you?
Oh, I didn't talk about this for many, many months.
But did you talk to colleagues about it?
No, not in the beginning, no. Mm-hmm. No, it wasn't until later on when I started having a lot more of these experiences. I guess it all started, I started talking about it really heavy duty about a year and 3 or 4 months later when I had a download of instructions, and then I was inside a wheel floating in the middle of like a matrix type of reality, where inside this wheel it had all these various paranormal components in each side, each spoke of a wheel. Like, for example, E.T. Contact was one spoke. Near-death experiences was another spoke. Out-of-body experiences was another, you know, area of the spoke of the wheel. Remote viewing, you know, ghosts and spirits, the spirit world, etc.
How about cryptoids, Bigfoot, anything?
Oh, no, no, that I don't recall that. No. I remember it was like eight different topic areas. Uh-huh. And then what was in my head, what was put into my head, what was holding everything together was consciousness and quantum physics. Okay? And that all of them are all interrelated. It's all one. And it's all controlled by consciousness and quantum physics. Okay? Now, that same day, I don't know if you've ever had Mary Rodwell on your show. Okay?
No.
Mary Rodwell is one of the top researchers of individuals that have had UFO-related contact. She's been she has researched over 3,000 cases. Okay, she's not that well known in the United States because of the travel expenses to the U.S. Most people get, you know, Yvonne Smith, Barbara Lamb, Kathleen Martin, but in Europe, Mary Rodwell is all three of these ladies all put together. Just to let you know, of her background. And so what happened was 7 months before, I had sent an email to, you know, Grant Cameron, Joe Montaldo, David Jacobs, you name it, you know, some people that dealt with this area, you know, Barbara Lamb, whatever, top ufologists, telling them about my story and wanting to find answers because the internet was just full of junk. You know, it was like they're angels, they're devils, they're Nephilims, they're Anunnakis. And then you had a million people, you know, I've got all the answers. I've got all the answers, you know, and they're all contradicting each other. So mm-hmm. I sent an email to these top people, just like any experiencer. You want someone to talk to, you know. And so I got responses from a few folks. I think Whitley Strieber was one of them. Grant Cameron was another one. I forgot who. Joe Montaldo was another one. And so anyway, Mary, that day that I got that download, sends me an email. He says, "Dear Ray, I'm responding to your email that you had sent 7 months ago, but it just popped up on my screen." Okay? So then I immediately went on email and I sent her an email. Well, you don't know what the hell's happened since in these last 7 months. And just today, this happened. So then she showed me how to use Skype. I had never used Skype before. And we talked about her work. We talked about catching up with all my additional experiences that I had since that day of the sighting of the craft with my daughter and my three friends. And so she also told me about this professor at Harvard who worked very closely with Dr. John Mack for many years before Dr. John Mack died. And then after he died, he's one of the founders of the John Mack Institute to carry on the legacy of Dr. Mack. And that he had worked with, has been working with experiencers for over 30 years. And that Rudy, in fact, is one of the world's leading experts on quantum physics and consciousness. And so I didn't really pay a lot of attention to that, you know, until the very next day. Mary and I hung up and we'll say, okay, we'll continue to chat. By the way, I did ask Mary about that, you know, does she ever go back 7 months to check her emails? And she started laughing. She says, "Ray, I can barely keep with one day's emails. How in the world am I going to go back 7 months?" So I said, "Well, Mary, how do you explain that?" And she laughed out loud, you know, almost hysterically. She said, "Ray, by now, you ought to know what happened, you know, that the ETs basically waited to put it there in front of me this day that I got that download." Now, here's another quote-unquote synchronicity. That very next day after I had my download and I spoke with Mary, I got a phone call at 9:30 in the morning from Dr. Rudy Shields. Okay, I didn't even know this fellow, never even met him, never even spoke to him. He calls me. Remember, this guy's a 75-year-old professor who's one of the directors of the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. He had a battle with Stephen Hawking, which I found out later on, for over 25 years as to what is the true nature of black holes. Okay, Rudy won the war, not Stephen Hawking. Hawking publicly admitted 2 years ago that for the last 30 years he had been completely wrong on black holes. And now most astrophysicists accept the model that was put forward by Dr. Rudy Shields. Just to let you know, the mind of this guy. This guy's a genius among geniuses. So he calls me up at 9:30 and he starts spoon-feeding me advanced quantum physics. And he said, "Ray, advanced quantum physics and Dr. Edgar Mitchell's quantum hologram theory of consciousness and physics can explain all of the paranormal phenomenon. So the vision that you had and the instructions that you had were actually correct. But yet the rest of the majority of humanity doesn't understand that." Okay? And so at the end of it, he says, Ray, look, you know, these ETs gave you a mission. Because what I didn't tell you what they had told me was that when I was in this mystical state, this matrix type of state where this wheel was floating around me, I was given a download, okay? Because I didn't physically see these ETs, okay? And again, I was in the middle of a traffic jam going to work on Monday morning at 8:30 in the morning.
Wow.
Okay? And it was the middle of this traffic jam that this occurred. And basically what I got, the message was that I need to inform humanity of the relationship between these entities that have been working with me, these entities, the spirit world, and consciousness.
Wow.
Okay.
In a traffic jam.
In the middle of a traffic jam at 8:30 in the morning. and I called an experiencer, the only experiencer that I've been talking up to that time, and was only for 2 months. And she was someone that Joe Montaldo had sent to communicate with me because Joe is doing some studies on abductions, you know, and experiencers. So that's how, you know, I came a hold of this individual. So I called her up at 8:30 in the morning and I said, you won't freaking believe what just happened. And so, you know, we had that brief conversation. And it was that night that I got Mary Rodwell to send me that email. Now, towards the end, Rudy said, look, Ray, they gave you an instructions of what you need to do, okay? And I said, but look, Rudy, I have no idea what the hell I'm going to do. It wasn't like, you know, do step A, step B, step C. You know, it's just like some nebulous thing, you know? And he says, don't worry. It always comes to experiencers. You know, clarification always comes later, you know? And Rudy said, well, if you do something, I recommend an organization. And if you do form this organization, I will be there to help support you and to back you up. Initially, we thought it was like a documentary or something like that to do, you know? Because but let me continue the story. I'm jumping the gun a little bit. So Rudy said he'll back us up. He'll be our scientific advisor. And then he says, jot down this telephone number. So I started writing down the telephone number. He said, this is the telephone number of my mentor. So this is the mentor of the smartest man in the world, the person that bested Stephen Hawking, okay, one of the directors of the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. He said, call him up. I said, well, who's this? He says, Dr. Edgar Mitchell. And at that point, I was like, you know, I already knew who he was. Rudy and I agreed to converse. And it took me like 4 hours before I called Edgar up. And when I did call him up, he said that Rudy had already sent him an email and had chatted with him briefly on the telephone and said, I'm someone to be taken seriously and to pay attention to me, you know. So what Edgar did, he invited me to his house, okay, for the next day. So now we're at the third day, okay, because the first day was my download and me being inside the wheel. That night, Mary Rodwell sends me an email that I sent 7 months late. The next day at 9:30, Dr. Rudy Shields calls me. I didn't call him. He calls me at 9:30 in the morning. And then Dr. Edgar Mitchell that afternoon invited me to his house. So the next day I was at his house. And, oh, my God, I didn't even know this man. And he's going on into all these intimate stories about his life. And I won't go into a lot of these details because it's not very relevant. But basically, he told me all about Roswell, you know, the whole everything. Astronauts, you know, some stories of astronauts. So at the end of it all, he repeats the same thing that Rudy told me. And he says, look, Ray, you know, I will back you up with Rudy. We will be your scientific advisors. And as a matter of fact, I have a group called Quantrac. Which he explained to me were a group of advanced physicists. And we've been working on various physics-related projects, including the physics of zero-point energy and the physics of consciousness. We've been doing this for many years, and we can invite them in to help us out. Okay. So then when we agreed to continue chatting, and, you know, I told him I have no idea what the hell I'm going to do. And same thing with Rudy. It'll come to you. It always comes to you, you know? So then I then sent an email to Mary Rodwell. And I said, Mary, look, we need to do something. You know, we need to form an organization. And then I said, Edgar and Rudy are not going to be, you know, moving forward with this because these are two men that are extremely busy. Why don't you and I, you know, start this? I have no idea what we're doing, and we thought it was going to be a documentary or something like that, a little movie or something. You know, we really had no idea. So 2 weeks later, you know, Mary says, Ray, I got the perfect name for it, Free. the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. Now, mind you, we had no idea what we were going to be doing anyway, okay? So then one day I was on the computer. It was a Saturday morning. Nobody was here. And all of a sudden, I just started typing. I just started banging away, you know, for an hour and a half or 2 hours. And what it was a whole mission of what FREE would be doing, this new organization. And within a month, we had a who's who joining Dr. Mitchell, Dr. Rudy Shields, and Mary Rodwell. Now we have a whole bunch of retired academics. One of the academics is the chair of our research study, Dr. John Klimo. And he's a recently retired tenured professor of psychology. He's one of the world's most famous academics on the paranormal. And he's taught research methodology for over 40 years. He's chaired 250 PhD dissertations. We also have in our group a neuroscientist, again, a retired professor of the brain, of neuroscience. His name is Dr. Bob Davis. And he just recently wrote a book and has been on several radio programs talking about his book, which is a book titled UFOs, Should We Believe?
And, yeah, he was on this show a little while ago.
Okay, yeah, so you know his background then. Mm-hmm. Only recently, he and his wife, I think it was maybe 3 years ago, he and his wife were out in Sedona. And again, this guy was a scientist, a brain, you know, a specialist. Totally skeptical all of this material. So he and his wife saw a UFO in the middle out of Sedona. And then he just freaked out. He got hit in the head by a 2x4, you know, and began researching this phenomenon. And what he discovered doing, you know, heavy-duty scientific academic research on this, basically through government publishings, government reports, was that there is more than credible evidence for a scientist to reasonably conclude that, yes, the UFO phenomenon is very much real. And so I then brought him in to FREE, again with the approval of Dr. Edgar Mitchell and Dr. Rudy Shields, to be like the skeptic of our group, you know, the rationalist scientist type. And he wound up being, you know, like the co-chair with Dr. Klimo of our research study. Other people we have on board, Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who was the first academic to actually publish articles on individuals that have had UFO-related contact. But back then, almost all the studies were done on abductees.
Right. But Leo was on a little while ago, and he did mention this. I just have a – we're moving further away from something I want to ask you about, actually.
Surely.
And – one of the things that I hadn't heard it until, I'm going to say, maybe I started hearing it about 8 months ago, the word download over, and everybody's talking about download. I was at the Experiencers Speak this last weekend in Portland, Maine, saw Grant Cameron, Kathleen Martin, Stanton Friedman, Travis Walton, et cetera, et cetera.
And, Kathleen is on our board of directors.
Okay. So I do have some things to talk about as far as that term and everything. But I want to talk about the wheel. The wheel, to me, is fascinating. And by the way, if you're listening live, you can call in the show at 603-967-4030 or jump in the chat room at Podcast UFO and ask a question. So there was someone on the message board who has – I'm just going to basically read his question. It's similar to one I had in mind, but he's saying, I have heard others mention this similar image of a wheel.
Yes.
Have you talked with others who had the similar image? And if what were the differences or similarities?
Well, interesting enough, the person that put that conference that you attended to, the Experience to Speak conference, this is Ms. Hewins, Audrey Hewins. Mm-hmm. She had a similar experience of the wheel.
I see. Uh-huh. Okay. Anyone else that you're aware of?
There was another experiencer that had a very similar experience of the wheel, that they were in a type of like a matrix reality. That you're like floating somewhere in, you know, and you're inside a wheel and it's floating around you. Hmm. So there's three people that I know of. But again, I have not published, I don't have a book published or anything like that. A lot of people don't really know a lot of my story, you know.
Now, have you ever seen this? Have you ever seen this after that? We have someone calling in. Hang on just a second.
Yeah, surely. Here.
Hello, caller. You're on the line. Please say your first name and go ahead and ask a question.
Yes, my name is Bobby. I'm calling from Jasper, Alabama. And my question is this. Do you believe that there is any way that we can, for lack of a better word, call in, if you will, kind of send a mental telepathy kind of message to some of these visitors to come and visit us? And do you believe that that would be a positive experience, or could there possibly be some that you don't want to come visit you?
Okay, let me answer that question. We did ask that question in our survey. I haven't gone into the research study yet, but it's a survey that we've gotten 2,500 responses from individuals that have had UFO-related ET contact. And we did ask that question, and we have gotten positive responses in the very high hundreds of individuals that have called down a craft. We cannot publish our findings with actual numbers and percentages and things of that sort. But yes, that's a very, very high number of people that have done that, just like I did it, my wife did it. Also, there's this concept, which is totally changed, but in Latin America, Sixto Paz in 1974 formed a group called Grupo Rama, which is a group to basically call down these crafts and begin communications with these beings. And then
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. And yes. You're saying that, though, that brings to light something, and I hope I'm not stepping on any toes of what I'm about to say, because that's not my intention.
Yeah.
But there's one person that that kind of he gets groups together, and that is Dr. Stephen Greer. And he will get groups together, but now he advocates that, you need to be experienced with this. With that in mind, and you mentioning that, and this individual, he does this and encourages this. Have you ever had any personal interaction with Dr. Greer? And if so, what's your opinion on some of his theories and whatnot that he's proposing?
Okay. Well, let me just answer the last question very briefly.
Sure.
There have been many individuals all over the world that have been forming these contact groups even before Stephen Greer's name was even a public household, okay? Especially in Latin America. And these individuals that I know have conducted these sessions all throughout the world. And many participants have had contact of both the crafts and these beings. Now, Dr. Stephen Greer, I personally have not had any relationships with him, informal or formal relationships with him. Now, in terms of positions, Free takes the position, a neutral position of whether these experiences are positive, negative, neutral, whatever, you know. Our publishings, our surveys, I should say, our surveys will be revealed on December 1st. And we do ask those questions of experiencers. We asked it many, many different ways. And again, we've had 2,500 people that answered this. So it's not just a little tiny study that someone did with, 20 or 30 people. This is a huge, gigantic study. And we did ask that question that you just asked about whether they're positive or negative or neutral or whatever in many different ways. Now, the findings will surprise
you.
What I was going to say is that the findings, the way these experiencers are answering them, most of the public will find it much more different perception than what they see on the internet.
Right, and I look forward to that. The only reason that I asked about Dr. Greer is because just as you said, his name has been one that's kind of become household talk, if you will. He's got a little bit more publicity. I very much look forward to your release, and I'm thoroughly enjoying your interview this evening, and thank you for asking my questions, and I'll continue to listen to the program.
Thank you, Bobby.
Questions.
Appreciate the call in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bobby.
So, okay, and if anyone else also, I always forget to say this, if you'd rather Skype in, my username is Marty Willis. I don't like to be called Marty, but that was the only one that was available. So Marty Willis, if you want to Skype in. And again, the phone number is 603-967-4030. Now, I can't remember exactly the topic that we were on, but it seems to me we did have another question.
You want me to take the other question, or to talk a little bit about some of the other board of directors. We have 11 individuals.
Yeah, okay. We have about 10 minutes or so to the top of the hour. So let's just devise what we're going to be talking about mostly in the second hour before we move on right now. We can talk about the board members, who's involved.
We can do that now. In the second hour, we can go in-depth in terms of the study.
Yeah.
Because so far we haven't, mentioned anything about the methodology.
Okay, sure. Let's go ahead and who's on board and how did you get them on board? You mentioned how the first two, obviously, did it all just kind of fall together?
Yes. Like, for example, Dr. John Klimo, someone recommended that I give him a call. I didn't even know his background. He himself is an experiencer. And he's public about it now.
Wow.
And so when I told him what I had in mind, he told me that he taught research methodology for 40 years. And he told me all the books and the PhD dissertations and stuff. And I said, oh, my God, you know, it's like he was put right in front of me to be the chairperson for this research study. Because I said earlier, you know, this is one of the world's leading academic in this area. And then Bob Davis was, he called me up and asked, you know, and sent me an email wanting to talk to me. So the other members, the non-academic members, I should say, are Kathleen Martin, who you know, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. I don't know if you ever had her on your show.
Mm-hmm.
She's published 72 books on the paranormal. And Mary Rodwell, who I mentioned before, who is one of the world's leading researchers in this field. We also have Giorgio Piacenza, who's one of Latin America's leading ufologists. And he himself is an experiencer. And Kathleen Martin did come out publicly last September that she's also an experiencer. And there's, you know, some other individuals on our board who are experiencers. I don't know whether they've publicly come out or not, but basically 80% of our board are experiencers. More than half are retired academics, actually five of them. We also have Dr. Michael Melton, who you probably met at the Experiencers Speak Conference. He is a PhD clinical psychologist who is a member of Starborn Support and works with many of the experiencers associated with that organization.
I'm sorry, I just missed the name, who that was.
Oh, the last one was Dr. Michael Melton.
No, and I didn't meet him. He was
probably
there.
Probably was that fat, chubby guy that was taking probably the video of the conference.
Okay, I know exactly who he is, yeah.
Well, he's a PhD clinical psychologist.
Ah.
And he's also a member of our board of directors. And he and Kathleen Martin are members of MUFON's Experiencer Research Team.
Uh-huh.
So we do have members of MUFON that are doing research on experiencers. Not experiencers, I should say on abductees, because that's the focus of their study. So as you could tell, we have an elite group working on this. It is an academically driven, academically guided research study.
Now, besides credibility, what has Dr. Edgar Mitchell brought to the table for free?
Oh, he's reviewed every document. He's reviewed the people that we were thinking of bringing in. He's given us the thumbs up or the thumbs down. On a few people, he's given us the thumbs down. He's made contacts with other individuals, opening up doors. Like, for example, he just recently, on Saturday, I was in his house again, and he signed a letter off for us to give to various conference organizers, requesting that one of our professors in free, be able to give a lecture at the major conferences around the world, not just on ufology, but in other areas to talk about our free research study after December 1st. So we're targeting conferences in 2016, hoping for them to invite one of our academics to give a formal speech about our findings.
Hmm. Okay. And
I could send you that letter that Dr. Mitchell signed off on. He just did it this Saturday.
So he's doing okay? I've heard a couple
he's
things.
He's 85 years old.
Right. Yeah.
His health is not, you know, in the best of health. I'm not at liberty to go into all the details of his health.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, he's not the Edgar Mitchell that I met two and a half years ago, the first time at his house, because, you know, age takes a toll on individuals. But he's still very sharp, very witty.
Yes, I bet.
You know, he's still, if you get into a debate with him, I wish you the best of luck.
Okay. So one of the questions I had here is, what type of publicity was undertaken to publicize the research study, just to get the word out there, to get these, what did you say, 2,000 plus people?
500 individuals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me go into the specifics.
Okay.
Sent out every month a posting on over 500 Facebook sites.
Okay. Wow, Facebook.
No, that's not the only one. That's just one out of like 10 different strategies. Okay. Now, the Facebook sites that we posted on was English, Spanish, and French. Okay. And it dealt with ufology groups, with MUFON groups, abductions, paranormal, parapsychology, exopolitics, consciousness, ET aliens, hybrids, ancient aliens, New Age groups, CE5 groups, with that person I just mentioned in the last caller a short while ago. And we send that out every month, our postings about our free research study. We also sent over 2,500 emails to a mailing list that we got from many of the people in our organization, like, for example, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, Mary Rodwell, Dr. Rudy Shields, you know, et cetera, that are participating with free. We also sent an email to all of the MUFON directors, state directors, assistant directors, international directors. It was a list of over 100 names. We also sent emails to the top authors of ufology, of the paranormal, of abduction, authors or researchers all over the world. So almost every people that you've interviewed, most of them have received an email from free announcing our experience or research study. And if they had any questions, to send us an email to free. We also sent the information on free to almost all of the major ufology and paranormal radio stations. We were also interviewed by two MUFON radio stations as well, and to the websites of all of these individuals and organizations. So no one has ever done this type of publicity before. For any type of research study associated to this phenomenon. So that's to respond of our public outreach, which is extensive.
It really sounds it. And I know, you know, just from my own experience, how much time, you know, something like that takes. And then if you want to boost posts, you know, you can spend some money too. I don't know if you do any of that type of thing. But, you know, just to get the word out there, it helps when you have other people helping. And it sounds like you have a team. I don't know how much of the work.
We have a huge support team backing us up.
And before we hit the top of the hour here in just a couple of minutes, if you can just say it's experiencers.co.
Dot org. It's experiencer, singular. It's experiencer.org.
Okay.
Experiencer.org.
Okay. And before we move on at the top of the hour, I just wanted to ask you one question for the first hour here, and that is to finish up for a couple minutes. Have you talked – I keep going back to this IRS thing, and I just wondered if you are out of the closet as far as this goes, you know, at work, or is it
– Now, yes. The way you had asked the question was – initially, after my experiences, I have indeed spoken with almost every attorney in my group.
Wow.
And my supervisor. Okay. Three of them have had experiences. Okay. One was a direct vision of a craft and an ET contact experience. Okay. Two of them have had paranormal experiences. I also asked the question, have they spoken to anyone? And they said, Ray, please don't tell anybody else. Don't tell anybody else. Just in confidence. Okay? So this is a group of about 12 attorneys, including with my supervisor, and three of them have had Well, one has had, as I said before, the actual sighting of a craft and an ET contact experience. And the other two have had paranormal experiences.
Wow. You know,
and
how
this is, it's very common, except people don't talk about it.
Yeah. Well, you know how the IRS usually can target someone? Well, it sounds like the IRS is being targeted to me.
I don't know. The reason I'm stating this, because another project that we're going to be pushing, we're going to be starting in a couple of weeks, is to begin a program called the Experiencer Liberation Day.
I saw that.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead and talk about that.
Okay, so you have been getting a lot of my emails, okay?
Uh-huh.
So with the Experience Liberation Day, we can talk about it in the next hour, but it's basically all these movements, you know, gays, lesbians, civil rights movement, the women's movement, you know, they're all out of the closet, okay?
Gray,
out of the closet.
It's called gray pride?
yeah.
Sorry.
But for us, we want to get experiencers out of the closet. Why is it that these three attorneys that work with me can't talk about these things publicly?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why myself, given my experiences, I cannot talk about it publicly? You know, 8 out of the 11 people in our group here and our board of directors are experiencers, yet only half of them are openly open about their experiences. Okay, why is that? It should not be. Okay, this is a phenomenon which is taking place all over the world. It's why can't we discuss it openly? Once we begin to discuss it openly, then we'll be able to deal with this in a scientific, academic, rational way, and not just some taboo that's on the internet of people spilling bullshit. You know, excuse the French. You know, of people spilling information without any credibility. So
right.
What we're trying to do with FREE is do the first ever academic comprehensive research study on experiencers and with these academics, and actually bring credibility to this field for the first time, so experiencers can indeed come out of the closet.
Right. Okay. So hang in there. If you're listening live, we're going to be right back. We're on the line here with Ray Hernandez. He is going to be talking this hour more about the research, that the study that's being done with all these 2,000 some odd people. You can call in this show at 603-967-4030. You can Skype in at Marty Willis at the username, Skype username, Marty Willis, MartyWillis. And all right, so we sort of left off about people being able to talk about this openly, freely, and I understand, you know, this has so many parallels to you hear about other, like, support groups of whatever kind it is, where people, you know, in numbers feel safe and talk about their own experiences and whatever they are in any given group. And how, say, even AA or all that, how it seems to work, it seems to comfort people to be able to talk about it. Is that part of what FREE is doing?
Yes, yes. We also have another program, which I haven't discussed yet. We've actually been running it for a year and a half. It used to be called the Experiencer Buddy Program, and now it's called the Experiencer Peer Support Program. And this individual, it's what it is that we announce it to individuals that have had any type of contact experience with, I don't like to use the word ET because it signifies extraterrestrial, but basically any UFO-related non-human intelligent being, and you need someone to talk to. We hook you up with an individual that has had many years of having these experiences. Most of the individuals that have volunteered for this, we have over 30 of them. Most of them are in their late 50s, 60s, and even 70s. And these are individuals that are not traumatized by this. They might have had early trauma, you know, when they first began these experiences. But over the years, it's like, you know, been there, done that, you know. So we hook these people up with these rookies, people I've never talked with anybody. And even a lot of older folks we talk to that I've never spoke to anyone except their spouse. But because we're doing this work with Free and we're publicizing all this work, people coming out of the woodworks, you know. So then they email us if they found out about this program, the buddy program, now called the peer support program, and we hooked them up with someone to talk to. And in a year and a half, we have helped almost 350 people. Okay. Now, let me give you an example of myself. Okay. I did not have a traumatic experience. It was my wife sees them as angels, you know, and they did have a miraculous healing of our dog. And I never had anything negative, okay? But yet, I was extremely traumatized by this. Why? Because my whole mindset was totally blown up. Here I was an atheist, okay? My wife would force me to go to church on Sundays, and it would be like once a month I would go, you know. The other times she would go without me, you know. And I was trained at Berkeley, and a PhD candidate at Berkeley, you know, rational materialist. And all of a sudden, this thing, you know, pops in my living room, and then all these other experiences. So your mind gets blown to little pieces, and you have to put them together again to make some semblance of your life. You know, you don't work. You become depressed. You're like totally anxious to be able to talk with someone. And it was about 9 months that I was alone. I had no one to talk to. So, you know, even though my experiences were positive. So there's a tremendous need to talk to other people.
Right, right. There's a question up on the message board. I thought you addressed it in your first encounter, but perhaps not. Have you seen an ET in person? And if so, can you describe the features?
Oh, yeah, I did describe it. It was this floating plasma being.
But was there any other have you ever had another experience where you've actually physically saw?
No, not physically. That's the only one. But basically, this ET, whatever you want to call it, you know, did take my wife and the dog and returned them back later. You know, the dog totally cured. It did force me to act totally irrationally. You just don't look at something like that in the middle of your living room, wave your hand at it, just said BS, then go upstairs and you get knocked out, like, you know, in seconds, you know. And then all of a sudden wake up and realize that, you know, your back, your consciousness, your real mind, your real thinking, you know, is back. And you run down the stairs and then, you know, craziness develops after your wife tells you what she had, you know. So it definitely was a being. It was not a plasma ball, like an energy ball or something like that. No, it was so huge. You know, you just can't make this stuff up. It was a being.
Now, how long lasting was the effects on the dog?
Oh, the dog, mind you, she was 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Again, that's the equivalent, I guess, you know, someone that's 95 or something like that. She lived for another 11 months like a teenager.
Wow.
11 and a half months, I would say, like a teenager. Running back and forth, jumping up and down, like whatever. And then the last 2 weeks of her life, she just went down super fast to the point where, you know, she was like barely able to walk at that point. But that, it was real quick. It was like in 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
We brought her to the vet, as a matter of fact, the first time. Soon after this happened, because she was taking all this medication. She was taking Viagra. She was taking diuretics. And we were saying, you know, wow, now that she's healthy, you know, we don't know whether to give her this medicine. So we brought her to the vet. And we told her, check her out. You know, and he checked her out. He says, what the hell happened, you know? And we said, we don't know. She just woke up like that way, you know?
I never heard of giving a dog Viagra.
Oh, it
is a common thing?
Yep. You ask a vet, and they will tell you that they do prescribe Viagra for dogs that their heart is not functioning properly.
Well, I think that was the original genesis of Viagra. It was for heart medicine or something, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
But my understanding is that it stimulates blood flow movement throughout your body and the heart. It gets the heart working, you know. and she had a very, very bad heart. And she was taking the diuretics to flush the water in her heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in her lungs as well. So, you know, she was a very, very sick dog.
Right.
But he checked her out, did a blood test on her, and says she's completely healthy. As a matter of fact, she's like, you know, when she was many, many years ago. You know, what the hell happened? You know.
And, that is bizarre, that whole thing.
And so we did tell him the truth like a year later. Okay. Mm-hmm. We did tell him the truth because he was a friend of ours. And it was only like a year and a half later that we started talking about this, you know, publicly. And we did tell him, and he basically thought that, you know, we were nuts. You know, he like changed the subject and things of that sort. But my daughter was in there because his daughter and my daughter attended the same elementary school and they were in the same class, you know. So, you know, he did verify for my wife all the facts. He did verify from my daughter. So it's like, you know, he just didn't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
You know, when you hear about this for the first time, you know, is the entire family crazy?
Yeah.
You know?
I understand that. I mean, that's pretty typical. Can you provide, we'll shift gears a little bit, can you provide an overview of the Free Experiencer Research Project in general?
Okay. Basically, what happened was that, as you know, I have this academic background, okay? When I had this experience, I did what is called an academic literature review. So I looked at the publishings of professors, of academics. I totally ignored, you know, the works of non-academic or information that was recovered through hypnotic regression. Because hypnotic regression is very controversial, and it's not fully recognized, and it's not something that academics rely upon. And so what I found out was that almost nothing was published about this quantitatively, okay, through quantitative data. I mean, you could go 100 people go into your office and for you to write a book about those 100 people, but that's not a scientific quantitative study that can really tell you what's going on throughout, you know, society. And so I then did a literature review, and what I found out was that the very last study in this field was the study that was done by our very own Kathleen Martin and Denise Stoner.
Mm-hmm.
And Denise Stoner, yeah, who's also a member of Free and has been working with us for 2.5 years. And basically that study only had 50 individuals that have had abductions, okay? And there was only 45 questions. Now, this is not going to cut, you know, the cake, you know. You need to focus not only on abductions, you need to focus on the individuals that are having all types of UFO-related contact experiences, because all of our researchers fully understand that abduction is just a small, abductees are just a small component of individuals that are seeing UFOs and that have had ET contact. And as a matter of fact, our research study, I can't not give you the actual percentages and the numbers, but our research study confirms that hypothesis that every member of our group said, that abduction is just one smaller component of the overall people that are seeing UFOs and are having contact. So anyway, I said, well, we almost know nothing about this because all the studies have been on abductees. So What differentiates our study with the previous studies that have been done in the past, one is the sample pool. As I said earlier, you know, Kathleen's study had 50 abductees. Leo's sample pool and his studies were very small. There was another professor, Robert Lelourve, who published this study back in 2010 titled the Omega 3 Participant Summary Project, and it only had 71 individuals, and it was a very few number of questions in a very, very limited area. And then there was a report that was done by Robert Bullard. But again, he took his data not on quantitative surveys that he undertook. He took quantitative surveys that were done by CUFOS of UFO reports and some of the experiences that people had, mainly abduction type of experiences. So basically, I'm fair to say that we almost know nothing about the overall UFO-related ET contact phenomenon.
Can I interrupt you just for a second?
Yes.
I do want to ask for a couple of sample questions in that. But
sure.
One of them I just want to know is because it's a topic that comes up quite often, and we had Nick Redford on recently, and that is, do you ask about their blood type?
Yes, we ask that.
And can you reveal anything about this study, or do we have to wait till December 1st?
Well, you have to wait till December 1st, but okay. The blood type is not what most of the people think it is.
Okay, because there's a lot of talk about Rh negative blood.
Well, what it is that Joe Montaldo did a study of individuals that that were targeted with Rh negative. Okay, we still need to do a full statistical analysis. Like, for example, there might be a difference between the people that are actually abducted, okay, and what is their Rh negative factor, and the people that have had, you know, ETs visit them but have no idea that they've ever been abducted. Okay, and you know, and obviously they've had UFO experiences, so it might be a difference between those two groups, but that only comes later on after December 1st when we start doing statistical analysis and comparing different groups. You know, how did this group answer that question? How did this other group answer that question? So that's why I'm saying what we're doing is a very, very sophisticated study. The preliminary findings. You know, not the statistical cross comparisons, but the preliminary findings will be publicly reviewed. But individuals need to understand that the actual, the real juicy stuff, the cross comparison stuff, will not be done until several months later.
I thought that was really interesting what Denise and Kathleen Martin did their study, just to hear the commonalities between, you know, abductees, no matter where they were from. But one of the questions I have for you, you know, you reached out in all these different venues to all these people to take the survey. Does anyone vet any of these people, or is it like free-flowing?
Well, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be doing hundreds of interviews.
I see.
We're going to be getting these individuals, and again, another difference between our study and the previous studies was that the previous studies took abductees, again, because all the previous studies were on abductees, that had experiences through hypnotic regression. We did not accept that.
I see.
We only asked for experiences based upon conscious, explicit memory. That's it. Mm-hmm. No lucid dreams, no mystical meditation journeys and things like that, even though lucid dreams and mystical meditation and hypnotic regressions is valuable information to be able to study this phenomenon. That component we're going to be asking when we do the interviews. But the surveys were just based on consciousness, explicit memory.
Well, now that we're talking about this, I'm thinking of someone like, say, the Allagash experiencers. Everyone remembered it 10 years later. They only remembered through, tidbits were coming back to them. But they were having all this through regression, all of them separately. And they all came up with, the same story separately. But you're not interested so much in as far as people taking a survey and that type of situation, but you are interested as far as interviewing them. Is that what I'm getting?
Well, the surveys, again, there's two different focuses here. For the survey, if you just ask any which way question about hypnotic regression or lucid dreams or mystical meditation, you could have your next door neighbor who took a Dolores Cannon class for 3 hours that does past life regressions to do a hypnotic regression session on them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Or you could have someone who totally sees these entities as pure angelic, will not even touch anyone that has had any type of negative experiences, and someone who has no idea what the hell they're doing, coaching and guiding the questions.
Right.
Okay?
That's always been a concern. You know, we have a sort of a mutual friend. I don't know how well you know her, but she is just getting into the field. And, you know, that as far as leading, they're very careful to make sure that they're not leading people. But I can definitely see how that could be a factor.
So what's going to happen, to answer your question, is that for the surveys, knowing that we would be fully attacked if we allowed hypnotic regression in the quantitative survey. Okay. But for the interviews, we're going to be, you know, one-on-one. We're going to be recording these interviews, and we're going to be going experience by experience by experience. I'm going to be asking, was that hypnotic regression? Was it conscious, explicit memory? Was it elusive? You know, to clarify each detailed experience. And again, to have that as part of the interview which is part of the experiencer phenomenon. For example, if Dr. John Mack, you know, did or Kathleen Martin did a regression, you know, we know it's going to be done properly and correctly because they've had years of training. They went to professional schools for all of this, that sort of thing. They're trained not to be biased, that sort of thing. But we cannot control for every, you know, Mickey Mouse person out in the streets that's doing these hypnotic regressions. Like I said, someone that's had a 3-hour Dolores Cannon course, and I'm not knocking her because I took that course myself, and I found it, you know, very interesting and very helpful for me. But I'm not, I can't go out now and do hypnotic regressions. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
But we are going to be incorporating that for the interviews.
I see.
And, yeah.
Okay. Well, I understand that certainly. And again, if you're listening live, you can either Skype at Marty Willis or you can call in at 603-967-4030. And when someone...
What I was going to say, Marty, is that I still have a couple of basic differences between our study and other studies, but we can continue after you ask a question.
Okay. Well, I think I kind of lost my place here, and what I was going to ask you was related to what you were just talking about.
So we were talking about hypnotic regression. Was that it?
But go ahead and continue.
Okay, I apologize.
No, it's me. It's me. Okay. I'm trying to look at the chat room and all kinds of things all at the same time, so I can easily.
The next aspect that differentiates our study with other studies, like I told you, we already have 2,500 individuals. Now, these are in three different languages, okay? Hmm. In English, we have had for phase one, over 1,800, well, now it's almost 1,900. 1,900 individuals that have taken our phase one study. And phase one is about 150 questions, okay? Hmm. We've had more than 1,100 individuals that have taken our phase two study. Now, the phase two study is for, you know, the bigger experiencers, people that have, you know, had lots of diversity of types of experiences. So, again, it's 1,200 people just in English, okay? And phase two is comprised of 450 questions. So the difference in terms of the number of questions. We've got 600 questions. And, you know, the last major study that was done on this, and again, it was just on abductees, was 45 questions. So, again, there's a huge difference in terms of the type of questions that were asked. And then we are expecting to do later on a phase three and phase four survey down the road. So it's going to be tons of questions down the road. So, the other aspect that I talked about is the languages. We have Spanish and in French. In Spanish, so far, we've had phase one, and we've had over 350 individuals that have answered phase one. Phase two is going to be launched this week. Okay, by the end of this weekend, it should be launched phase two. So we should be able to get a very large sample pool for Spanish individuals. And for French, I don't know what's going on with the French individuals, but we've only had 25 individuals. Close to 30 individuals that have responded to our phase one French survey.
Hmm. You know, I'm going to be talking in 2 weeks. There's going to be a pre-recorded. I'm going to be speaking with Klaus Vaughn from Sweden, and he was telling me he's really involved. That's his everyday job is UFOs, and he only knows of like two abductions. So it is kind of strange. It's almost spotty around the world. And the question I had for you that I couldn't remember was that not a question. It was a statement, and that is this weekend Kathleen Martin was giving a few sample commonalities of their research that they did, and she said that 66% of the abductions were conscious recall.
Yes.
Which I think is absolutely fascinating because you think of people being abducted in their sleep, and you think of people talking about sleep paralysis and all that, you know, the common ways that you hear people trying to explain
away. By far, the vast majority, not only of abductees, but of individuals that have had, quote-unquote, ET contact experiences. And again, we're talking about UFO-related ET contact experiences. People have seen UFOs and have had ET contact. I won't give a number, but the vast majority have been conscious.
Can I go back to when you were saying you were in a traffic jam?
Yes,
you were in a traffic jam, and then you had this experience. Did you just wake up in the middle of the traffic jam? I mean, what happened?
Well, again, one of the issues that we ask in our questions is this topic of missing time, which is we're just experiencers and researchers are just starting to understand this. And I know that Joe Montaldo has spoken on his radio show about that extensively. But every researcher in our group knows about missing time because they've spoken with so many experiencers. Like in my case, my wife thought that I never left to go upstairs. Like I was directly behind her the entire time.
Wow.
But yet, indeed, I was gone anywhere from 15 minutes to 15 minutes to a half an hour, maybe more. Because we really didn't look at our clock. It was Sunday morning at 6 o'clock, you know. And it was such a crazy day. I don't think we looked at our clocks, okay. But missing time is very, very common. Now, Rudy explained to me, most physicists, first of all, they understand this concept of a multidimensional reality. 20 years ago, most physicists did not accept it. Okay, but now, you know, Michio Kaku, Dr. Green from Columbia, most of the major physicists that are out there that are talking to the public acknowledge that they have a hard time believing in the multidimensional world, you know, reality of our universe of universes, but now they're begrudgingly forcing to accept it. So Rudy said that, in fact, we live in a multiverse. That he's an adherent to Edgar's quantum hologram theory of consciousness in physics, which deals with a multiverse reality, and that, in fact, time does not exist, just like most physicists accept that the concept of what we understand as time does not exist. Most of the people in our group also hypothesize that these entities are actually multidimensional entities. For many, many different reasons. I won't go into those details. Now, with the hypothesis that are multidimensional entities, and now that most physicists accept the fact that we do live in a multiverse, okay, and that most physicists do not accept the concept of time as we know what it is, and that's starting with Einstein, you know, in terms of his concept of relativity and time. Isn't it not too much of a stretch to think that these ETs can take you and put you back in time or maybe in the future in time?
So in other words, when you're in your car, you think you came back about the same time you were taken?
That's exactly what I'm getting at.
I see.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That you could be put back and you don't even realize what went on. Some experiencers have, I think it was Betty Andreasen in one of her books, mentioned that she was actually put back like a minute before these ETs came on. She actually saw in the living room her husband and her daughter, something along those lines, that she was sort of like an ethereal type of person that hadn't fully materialized back into reality, and she was seeing what was taking place back in time before the ET came, like a couple of minutes before. And numerous experiencers have stated that.
You know, it's funny. This has a parallel a little bit, and you were talking about it in this wheel experience you had.
Yeah.
It has a little bit of a parallel to some of the near-death experiences. You know, I don't want to go way off topic here. But
oh, it's not off topic. It's right on topic.
Okay.
We have, again, we asked that question about near-death experiences. We also ask a whole series of questions whether these ETs are associated with the afterlife, you know, with the spirit world. And we ask that question many, many different ways. Let me just tell you that based upon our findings, Free formed a separate subcommittee to further explore this issue that you brought forth.
Hmm.
And near-death experiences very, very prominently featured.
Wow.
And again, I can't go into the details, the percentages, but remember I told you in one of the letters I said that the results of our study is going to rock the field of ufology and the field of the paranormal?
Yes, I remember that. And also, there is one little – I do want to bring something up now that you just said that, is that there's a little bit of conflicting dates. I believe on your website it says January 1st, 2016, you're coming out with this. You mentioned on the show just a few minutes ago that it was December 1st, and it was originally going to be launched in September.
Yeah, let me clarify that.
Okay.
There's nothing there about January 1st, but let me clarify the dates.
Oh.
Our research committee several weeks ago had made a decision. Now, everyone on our research committee is every one of our board of directors that I previously mentioned to you, except Dr. Rudy Shields and Dr. Edgar Mitchell, because they are not researchers in this field. Everyone else is, okay? So, but they do, you know, help to run the show and free and give advice on everything else, including our research study. But these are not people like Kathleen Martin, Mary Rodwell, Leo Sprinkle, John Klimo, et cetera, that have been doing this for, you know, working with experiences for 30, 40 years in a research capacity. So anyway, they decided at that meeting that as of December 1st, that we would close the English language surveys and to release the English data to the public at that time. And so subsequently, we had our first board of directors meeting last Thursday, a week ago, 6 days ago. And at that time, we discussed the fact that it might taint the Spanish surveys and the French surveys, that they still have to do their phase two surveys. So it was decided at that meeting to not release the data, any data, on September 1st, but to release the data December 1st. So we would keep all the surveys open for another 3 months. And at that point, we could go, you know, on radio shows, publicly discuss our preliminary data, that sort of thing. Now, the interviews most probably are going to start after December 1st. So December 1st is really the date for releasing everything.
Okay. Because, see, I was on a website which was very similar. It's experiencer.co. And that
no one posts on that website.
I see.
For for over a year and a half.
Okay, that's like why the dates are off. Okay.
No, it's a non-functional website. Everyone, we're building our website right now as we speak.
Okay.
We have like a one-page temporary site that lists a lot of links, but that site is experiencer.org.
I see. Uh-huh. Now, we talked earlier, and you gave me a couple of ideas of some questions that would be helpful.
Yes,
and
yes.
So I don't want to ask any that you can't answer. And one of them was how many individuals in your survey have actually seen a UFO. Can you touch any of that?
Let me put it to you this way.
Okay.
It's the vast majority of people that answered our survey.
Sure.
Our phase one survey.
Now, had you seen, before your experience in your living room where you saw the plasma and all that, had you seen a UFO, or did you have?
Oh, no, nothing. I had no conception at all about UFOs, about ETs, the paranormal. The only thing I could think of is on these cable shows, you know, late at night, you know, there might be an Asian alien show or something like that. You watch it for 15 minutes and then you turn it off because you say to yourself, that's bullshit, you know, and you go on to the next program. So that was my only understanding of this reality.
Yeah. Now, you said the word bullshit twice.
Oh,
I'm not
sorry.
Sure. That's okay. Wait, did I just say it? Whoops, I just said it too. That's okay. It's not
apologize.
It's not a big deal, really.
Okay. Apologize to the audience that are sensitive to that term.
That's all right. Anyone want to call in, you can call 603-967-4030. You can ask a question in the chat room. Now, you talked about your dog and this healing, this miraculous healing. The dog was like a teenager. Are there people that I have heard this in when it comes to people claiming after an abduction experience? Now, are you seeing any of that?
Oh, goodness. You're asking all the relevant questions here. let's put it to you this way. Once our researchers saw how people responded to that question, then they decided to pursue it more extensively.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's all you're going to say?
I cannot give you data
sure.
or percentages, you know.
Uh-huh.
All I'm just saying is that the people in our research team knew that that has been happening. We actually have two members of our board of directors that can elaborate on that, but that's very specific to them. And no one will, as long as they publicly talk about it, no one will ever know about that. But there are two members of our board that that have had that experience. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And plus people have heard about it. The researchers have heard about it over and over again through the work that they do. but it's just not something that's studied, something that's not mentioned. There's no data on it. No one has ever asked any questions on it because most of the studies have been on abductees, you know, and that question has never been asked, okay? So we did ask that question in our study. So for the first time, we actually got real data.
Wow.
And let me just tell you the responses that we got. Everybody's eyeballs popped out.
Hmm. Now, I want to get back to a question I asked you in the last hour, and that is the word that I'm hearing all the time, and I heard it many times this weekend at the conference,
yeah.
And that is the word download. I got a download. Grant Cameron had a download. He was on recently. Everyone's talking about downloads. And am I wrong to say that I haven't heard people talk about this like a year ago and all of a sudden everybody's talking about it?
Well, let me tell you, you know, my own experience. When I started talking about it, I called it an ET telegram. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what a download was, mm-hmm. you know, because to me it was a telegram because it was super fast. It was instantaneous in my head. It's difficult to describe, you know, because you're having this wheel here. But the information is instantaneous. It's not like a voice. It's not like, hey, Ray, you know, wake the hell up. Let me tell you something. Now pay attention. You know, number one, blah, blah, blah. Number two, no, it wasn't like that. It's like an instant information going into your head. Okay?
Hmm.
And again, you know, I'm not familiar with this terminology. At least I wasn't terminology. So for the longest time, for a year and a half, maybe 2 years, I called it an ET telegram. Then I heard other people mentioning the word download. And I'm the only one that's mentioning ET telegram. They don't know what the hell I'm talking about, you know. So then I changed to download. You know, and that's what a lot of experiencers and abductees, you know, because what they talk about it. And again, I don't want to give out statistics of numbers, percentages of people that have had these quote-unquote downloads. But if I told you that it was a huge number, it's not something that's not known, publicly known. You know, if you go to that conference, if you talk to Kathleen, if you talk to Denise, if you talk to, you know, all the individuals in our group, they will tell you that it goes hand in hand with the ET contact phenomenon, UFO-related ET contact phenomenon.
You know, you go to one of the cases, which I think is one of the most outstanding cases ever. And it's those 62 school children in Zimbabwe.
Oh, I need to tell you a story about that.
Yeah, I'd like to talk, because talk about downloads. You know, they all talked afterwards about, you know, seeing visions of, you know, we better take care of the earth.
Yeah.
Go ahead. What do you have on that?
Oh, yeah. No, nobody knows about this. Okay. My wife has a friend of hers. Her son was a year ahead of my daughter in school. And because she lived at a distance, she always hang out with my wife before it was time to pick up her son. And then they became very good friends. And then, you know, they get together a lot, you know, for many social occasions. So one day she was in the house and she overheard me speaking with an experiencer. And she heard this word UFO, you know, all over again. And it was someone in Spanish that we were talking, okay, a Spanish-speaking experiencer. So then after I hung up, she goes, Ray, I overheard you, you know, talking on your cell phone, and you were talking about UFOs, okay? And I think you even mentioned someone that has seen a UFO. What do you know about UFOs? Hmm. So then, you know, I told her, okay? Now, we've never spoken about this. My wife, you know, my wife never speaks about this to anyone. You know, a lot of our friends know about it, but just out to, you know, someone that's not an intimate close friend, we don't talk about this. So anyway, I started telling her about our experiences, which she never heard of, my wife's and my daughter and my experience. Then I started telling her about my group that we're doing, the free group, all the members in our group. And then she says, oh my God, I've never mentioned this to anyone else. She was a school teacher in rural Colombia. And she said it was like similar to Zimbabwe, which is rural. And it had little kids, you know, like pre-kindergarten kids to all the way up to, I think, the eighth grade, the kids were. All of a sudden, a ship landed on their property at a distance. And these beings came out, three beings.
Wow.
Tall, small beings. And then she even described it, what it looked like. And I said, well, how do you know what they look like? She said, well, the principal of the school and some of the other teachers and I, in my own class, had my kids to do the drawings. Okay.
How come this case is not, you don't hear about this case?
Probably no one talks about it. Who in the hell is going to talk about it? You know, if you're this lady, are you going to talk about it? If you, one of the teachers there, are you going to talk about it? Of course not. You know?
Well, it seems like if there's enough people that witness something like this, it will come
out. As a matter of fact, she came to my house today, Martin. And I told her, I'm going to get you on video, even if you have to turn your back, you know, for you to say it in Spanish, which is her native language, and for us to translate it later. And she said, yes, I'll do it, you know. And there we could get the full story. And she even mentioned, you know, more or less the date. And it was like either a year or before or after the John Mack incident. I forgot exactly, but in the video, she could tell it. She knows the city. I said, do you have any contact with any of those teachers? She said, well, maybe one that I kept in contact with over the years, but I haven't spoken with this person in many, many years. And I said, do you know any of the children? And she says, no, you know, because I haven't lived in that city in many, many years. So then, you know what I did? I went straight to the YouTube, and I showed her John Mack. Oh. And this woman's eyeballs popped out. Okay, she saw the drawings that the kid did. She says, oh, my God, it's almost the exact drawings that these kids drew. Hmm. And that was when I asked her about the drawings, you know, because she said that they actually invited the parents of the kids to come in. And that's when they had these discussions.
Wow.
You know, she discussed it in her room, you know, but she described it that her kids in her class were the toddlers, the kids that were, you know, 4 years old, 5 years old, and the kindergarten kids, you know, but that almost all the kids were out in recess. So even the older kids saw it. It's wow. Almost identical. Now, here's another thing. In Australia, I asked Mary Rodwell and some of our folks in Australia. They said that the same incident happened in Australia where a craft landed. These grays came out. I think it was grays. I don't want to misspeak here. I think it was in the mid-70s, too.
Yeah, you're talking about Westfall?
Maybe that's what it was. You probably know more about it than I do.
Well, we had Shane, I'm trying to think of his last name, that is the main lead researcher on that. Okay. Yeah, that it was very similar. There is a lot of similarities to that, except I don't believe they saw beings, but I'm not positive. I can't say that for sure.
I don't recall. You know, all I know is that I spoke with a couple of folks. They said that a craft did appear. I think it actually landed.
Yes.
And that it was seen by the school kids. In terms of the details, I don't remember. But this lady, you know, she was here for like maybe, you know, an hour and a half speaking with my wife. And we had a quick chat. And I like, you know, you know, told her like, you know, jokingly, I said, look, we got to schedule this date, you know, and I said, even if you got to turn your back, you know, we'll do it. And she says, sure, you know. So I've just been so busy, but definitely I need to do that.
Now, does she speak English as well?
Very broken English.
That's too bad. I'd love to have someone like that.
But
on
again,
the show.
She, you know, she's the type that she doesn't, you know, want to come out publicly and open, you know.
Yeah, right. But I could, I've had one person on here. So far, in the 166 shows, that was anonymous. Everyone else, you know, I mean, I'm open to doing something like that. I think that story needs to come out. I would really like to.
I'm definitely going to do it. She's, let me describe her. I would say she's in her early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
She's a single parent that lives with her mother. Her son is, I think he's like 14 years old now, you know, and they're friends of the family now. And it's like out of the blue. And I said, you know, have you ever had any interest in UFOs and ETs and stuff like that? And she says, no, but I am, you know, a spiritual person, you know. She was asking me questions about the Kabbalah and stuff like that because I believe she is Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And she was asking me, you know, some questions about it. And I told her, you know, I had read some stuff about it, but I don't know too much. And she says she's just starting to get into it to try to learn it. But, you know, she is a, you know, a spiritual person, believes in God, but she's someone that doesn't want any of this, you know, publicized.
Right. All right. But, I'm going to skip around a little bit because we have a question up on the message board, and that's going all the way back to where your wife and the dog were taken, you know, the first. Did you think to look for any type of trace evidence? I mean, did that even cross your mind?
Well, we looked at the wall, and I did call MUFON. MUFON came. After we had our third major experience, series of experiences. The first series was inside our house. The second was my wife having, you know, the experiences outside the house with that craft and in Mexico. So outside the house, it was a huge, gigantic craft that she saw. And so after the experience that I had with my daughter and these three witnesses, I said, man, I got to call MUFON, because I was already was a MUFON member at that time, because I could have sworn that thousands of people had seen this thing, because it to me, it seemed like it went straight back. We have a highway like two or three blocks away, okay? So I could have put my last dollar that the end of that craft was above that highway. So I called MUFON. They had this lady, Mary Margaret Zimmer, that came on board. She used to be the assistant director for Florida MUFON, and she had worked with experiences for many, many years, I learned later on. So she came and she did a report. I don't believe she talked with my daughter. I'm not quite sure. And she didn't even interview the other three witnesses to the event. She just, I think, mainly spoke with my wife and I. And then what happened was Hangar One did a show on my MUFON report, and it was totally fabrications.
Oh, you know, I have to say, I hope I don't upset anyone out there. I actually been watching Hangar One on YouTube. There's some shows, and I like it. But I also want to say something about that show, and that is they present things as if they're fact.
Constantly. No, it was lies that they stated. For example, they had my wife quoting like it was that she was scared that we were this foreign, you know, evil or nasty entity entered into our house and stuff. No, my wife sees them in angels. They had this craft going through the wall and my wife seeing it. My wife never saw that first craft that she saw going through a wall because she was gone. She was taken. Okay? They had me down there with her seeing the craft going through the wall. That's a complete fabrication. They didn't even write down what I saw, that plasma being. They had nothing about the dog being returned miraculously healed. They had nothing about...
Seems like that would be an exciting part of the story.
No. They didn't even have the proper craft that my wife saw. They had the picture that I drew, that my wife drew and I drew about the craft that I saw, the plasma being. They had it all on the Hangar One, but they didn't even discuss it. And then they had it as a triangle craft. They had they must have paid a good money of this graphic artist doing a triangle craft. My wife never described the triangle craft. She described a very, very 300-foot-long cylinder type of craft with colors at the edges. You know, that was not what was drawn in this MUFON Hangar One. They didn't even include the drawings that we had done with the five witnesses of that huge craft that we saw outside our house. They didn't even discuss that or mention it. So it was a total fabrication and distortion.
Did I just hear the ghost of the Jack Russell barking?
Oh, no. That's we have a poodle now.
Oh, okay.
The Jack right. Russell died.
That was mean of me. I'm sorry.
But no. She had a good quality of life for that last year that she lived.
Though that is really an amazing story. Can you throw out, we have, maybe about 10 minutes or so left.
Yeah.
And can you throw out a couple of sample questions? Is that something you can find quickly?
Oh, sure. Let me go to phase one, just a couple of sample questions. I won't give you the answers and the details, but it's
okay.
Basically.
Okay, well, while you're looking, do you find?
Oh, I have it right now.
Okay, go ahead then.
Okay. Have you seen an intelligently controlled craft in the sky or on the ground that was not man-made? Another question. Did other witnesses also see the craft? Now, let me just tell you, if you see a craft, the majority have had witnesses, okay? Now, another question. Have you heard telepathic messages, an internal voice in your head speaking to you? And again, we associate this with the contact experience. Another question, Grant, this is Grant Cameron's favorite question. Do you believe that you possess information about advanced technology, advanced physics, or other scientific information that you've never received? Okay. Now, here's the link besides that. If you talk to all these researchers, all of them will state that they have had a good many of them, again, I can't give you numbers, that have actually gotten physics downloads, science downloads. Things that these are non-physicists Mm-hmm. People have no idea. These are hillbillies, you know, uneducated folks that all of a sudden they're talking about, you know, gravity and does time exist and things like that sort, you know.
This is really something, you know, and I mentioned earlier about the Allagash abductions.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get, and hopefully I'm going to get Jack Weiner on. I had his brother Jim and Charlie Foltz on, which is, you know, would be three out of the four of them.
Yeah.
But Jack Weiner had no math background at all.
Yeah.
And the reason, one of the reasons I want to get him on is because he came so mathematically,
deficient. Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to say, that he, I think he actually did some work for NASA and stuff.
Well,
I
mean, let me give you a response to that question. That's another question that our researchers' eyeballs pop out.
Hmm.
Okay, how people answer to that question. And on after December 1st, I can give you the results of that. But it's, you know, it's seldomly talked about, but yet we address it in our free questionnaire. Again, these are all questions in the first questionnaire. Another question, have you experienced out-of-body experiences?
Huh.
Okay, again, mm-hmm. eyeball-popping questions. Can you see energy or auras around people? Okay, have you had some kind of healing done on you? By these non-human intelligent beings? Do you believe that you have observed a non-human intelligent entity? And then we go into the descriptions of the various entities that people have seen. We have categories for short gray, tall gray, hybrid, insectoid, reptilian, human-looking, spirit form, small animal type, large animal type, energy being. Then we even describe, how can you describe your interactions with this being? And we go into, you know, positive, negative, neutral, both positive, negative, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Those is just a sample of some of the questions. For example, how many times did they interact with this non-human intelligent being? And again, it was eye-popping, huh? How many times people have had these interactions? The vast majority have been more than 20, you know, percent-wise in terms of the grouping categories that we had. Let me go into phase two, some of the questions in phase two. Okay. Do you ever recall being on an ET craft or a ship? Have you ever been relocated to another location? And that includes, you know, perceived abductions and being relocated but not perceiving to be abductions. So we asked it in a much more broader way. Did you ever have an ET contact experience in a 3D reality, you know, like here on Earth? Have you ever had a near-death experience? Okay. Have you ever seen small and less than 1 foot in diameter colored orbs? And if so, where did you see them? And we had different categories of where people might see them. We also had a question about orbs going through through doors, through windows, through physical objects. You know, we talked about the alien breeding program. We talked about implants. We talked about how do you believe ETs in general are bad or malevolent or evil? Do the ETs have a personality? Have any of these ETs been playful with you? Okay. Do you believe that you have formed some type of an agreement with these ETs? Have you ever had a MyLab? We have like maybe 10 MyLab related questions. We have like maybe 20 abduction related questions. We have various questions about, you know, breeding programs, about implants, a lot of questions about implants. We ask questions, for example, let me give you a question here. Do you believe that there is a connection between the ETs and the paranormal? Do you believe that there is a connection between the ETs and the spirit world after death or heaven? Okay. Let me see. Let me go into the last question here, because that's very, very important here. How would you categorize your last few extraterrestrial encounter experiences? Okay. And then we had this choice. Okay. This is the last few. We're not talking about the initial, because we also had a question about the initial. And it was highly negative, slightly negative, neutral, slightly positive, and highly positive. Again, we've had a total of 714 individuals that answered that question.
Wow. Hey, okay. just to let you know, we have someone in the chat room that lives right by Westfall. We were talking earlier about the Australia incident.
Yes.
And he just clarified that the most factual part of it is that the craft landed in a wooden area near the school, and very few kids followed it. There were no beings seen at that time, but it's still a really great case. Well, and I believe they put a monument up for it.
Yeah, I think there was a monument. They gave me a photo of a monument. But in my case, there was a craft. It was seen by tons of children. The children were asked to make drawings and independently speak to their individual school teachers and then as a group about their experiences. The parents were called in, and they spoke with their parents about these experiences in front of them.
Right.
And so...
Now, so we only have just a little bit over a minute here.
Yes.
So how are you going to get the word out? That's what I want to know. How are you going to get the word out about this? The report once December 1st rolls along.
Well, we have, again, everyone, it's experiencer.org, which is our website, O-R-G. And we're going to be publicly releasing it to our website that's soon to be developed. We're going to be going on tons of radio shows to give discussions like we've been having. You will get the data beforehand in PDF files. And we have requested to speak at the International UFO Conference. We have requested to speak at Contact in the Desert. And Dr. Edgar Mitchell did... send those formal requests to Alejandro Rojas and to Mr. Andrews, who coordinates Contact in the Desert. And we would like to be able to be invited not only to UFO and paranormal related type of conferences, but also, you know, to universities, to psychological associations, to NASA engineering, you know, associations, you name it, because this is way beyond ufology. Ufology is one little tiny, you know, grouping here. What we're doing in our study goes way beyond ufology. It deals with the total reality of what's going on with this UFOs and contact experience. So it deals with the whole world.
All right. Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Martin. Once again, experiencer.org.
Very good. Okay, everyone. So I'd like to thank a few people for helping out with the show. We have Keith Rowland. He's the chief bottle washer of the network here. I think that's what he said he was, for producing the audio part of it. Alejandro Rojas for the news early on. I also want to thank our guest, of course, Ray Hernandez. And Peggy Shunning for managing the Facebook page. She's been under the weather. Hopefully she'll be back soon. And music, Kerry Lloyd Whitehouse, Bruce Rainier. We'll be back next week, same time, with Mark O'Connell. Remember, don't play any games. We're trying to support the show for any more because I have to figure all that out. So we'll be back next week right here on the Dark Matter Digital Network. Thanks a lot, and remember to keep your eyes to the sky.